is the Day Zero update for October 28th, 2018. I'm Philippe Odenolfo.
I'm Patrick Nelson.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Chris Sologi.
And if you were expecting the Red Dead show, that's not happening this week.
We're doing that next week.
Yeah, this turns out
they actually had to go and find me to let me know so I could go ahead and join in.
It's like Brandon's the only one on the show right now who's actually got the game. Dan Reb is in LA. Chris isn't going to have his copy for another couple of weeks, and Lee is camping, so it didn't make a whole lot of sense to do it today. Next week we'll do that, and it'll probably be kind of a similar format to what we did for Octopath, only hopefully I won't drop out twice during the show. So that'll be fun.
There were some technical difficulties.
Yes, mostly my PC melting down. But that's sorted now, and my PC's working great. We've been playing some stuff this week, and I've been doing, of course, Shining Force, still getting through that. About to go through the last boss, and I remember how much of a bitch that was on the Genesis, so, I'm thinking actually that's gonna be easy, because I'm kind of noticing that the GBA version skews a little bit more on the easier side than the Genesis one did. So hopefully it won't be that much of a problem, especially with the way my characters are leveled at the moment. I shouldn't have too much issues. But beyond that, I've been playing some Defense Grid 2 in preparation for an article that I'm working on. That's happening. What else have been going on? Oh yeah, Castlevania. The Requiem Collection came out on Friday, and I've been playing a good deal of that. I'm kind of liking what they did with this collection. It's kind of bare bones as far as extras goes, because there aren't any. But they did do some stuff, some cool stuff, like I mentioned the speaker.
This is two of the best platformers of all time.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Big deal.
Yeah. No big whoop. Yeah. The PSP audio has been, is what's in there for, both games, technically. You also have the choice between English and Japanese VO, if you want to go that way.
Even better.
Yeah. Also, they did some cool stuff like, picking up items and stuff that all comes through the speaker. So that's kind of cool. Although, they would have been nice if they had muted that sound effect from the game screen as well. But they didn't do that. Maybe they'll patch that later. And they also added rumble to both games, which is something that neither of them had. And in Symphony of the Night, that actually makes a significant difference. You wouldn't think it would.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but it does. A lot of the enemies will kind of telegraph their attacks, and that actually takes the form of some rumble feedback. So not only can you see their cues, you can actually feel it. So
that is brilliant.
Yeah. So yes.
So Konami's running on a skeleton crew these days, but at least one of them's a genius.
Yeah, well, whoever they got to do this particular collection, you can tell there's not a lot of... They didn't put a whole lot of budget in there, but they decided that these particular changes were going to be worth it. And, it looks like it's done by a small team, but they did a really nice job.
They did some work.
Yep. So, highly recommend picking up that collection. I should also mention, this does the same thing as the 360 version did, where the boss battles don't slow down because it's not running on a PlayStation.
Mm-hmm.
In effect, that actually makes the game a little bit harder. Because that slowdown was actually to your advantage. You don't get that, especially with the big, ball of corpses, which was like notoriously bad on the PS1. Good collection. Pick it up. It's definitely, if you got a PS4 and you want to play Symphony of the Night, this is actually, I would say at this point, the definitive way of playing it.
So, nice.
Yeah. Mm. And I've also been playing, I can't editorialize too much on this because I'm embargoed until Friday, but I've been playing Grip Combat Racing, which is Roll Cage.
Ah.
It's like, remember that Psygnosis racer that they wanted to follow up Wipeout with? It didn't, which was it had some great ideas, but didn't quite execute them too well. In the
but it wasn't goddamn Wipeout.
It wasn't a Wipeout, but it wasn't bad either. The second one was actually quite good. And this is, it's not like a spiritual successor to that. It flat out is that. So, yeah, you can make of that what you will. I'll have a review of that. I'm going to try to have it for release date, but, yeah, no promises. So yeah, that's kind of been my week. What about you, Pat?
Well, that was a pretty solid review in itself, though. I mean, fuck the embargo, right? But, you know, for me, it's just been Soul Calibur 6. Hmm. More and more of that. I just wrapped up the first portion of the single-player campaign, which is basically the Edgemaster mode of the proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
Took care of that this morning, and so now I've just got the... I guess they're calling it Chronicle of Souls or some shit like that, but yes, it's the individual character storylines.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I wish Namco was better at balancing single-player content, at least as well as they do with multiplayer. There were definitely some party fouls in there that really there's just no goddamn excuse for in 2018.
Hmm.
Lazy steps to make the AI strong. What I call automatic right answer responses. So if you throw out an attack, say 16 frame startup, it will map that to execute at the same time, maybe a 12 frame startup.
Hmm. Oh, things so like that. The Mortal Kombat 2 philosophy of AI.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And the fact that we're calling it that tells you, you know, just how archaic and lazy it really is.
Hmm.
I don't know, just it feels like they did the game a disservice with the way the AI responds to things and what goes into those responses.
Hmm.
Especially for a franchise as historically cerebral as Soul Calibur, it just feels like a regression.
Hmm.
But, you know, hopefully I'm through that part now. You know, I just feel like maybe I'm old-fashioned, but you shouldn't need your A game to play the... you shouldn't need to bring your A game to play story-related content or single-player content in general. You shouldn't even have to have an A game.
Hmm.
And there are a few of those moments in Soul Calibur 6, which, you know, to some players might represent very real walls.
Yeah. So
we'll see what happens there. But I'm just about done with the single-player content from what I can tell, and I look forward to... just focusing on actually sitting down and learning a character and jumping into the multiplayer with both feet.
Hmm.
But since we're not doing the Red Dead 2 special today, if you've got any questions about Soul Calibur 6, I'll be happy to answer them.
Well, I'm kind of wondering what that what format that single player content takes. Because, you know, back in the Edgemaster days were basically like, it was either like one round or they were a series of characters that you had to go through.
It runs the gamut.
Oh, yeah?
You go from place to place. You're following a storyline that basically takes your original character for Libra of Souls, which is the Edgemaster type of mode. It's the same thing. You're going all over the map doing all kinds of stipulation matches. Some of them are pretty crazy, like you can only finish an opponent off with critical edge, things like that.
Ugh.
There are a few of those. And you're just playing as your custom character throughout all of these, and that custom character is actually a story character. Like, they have a part to play in the Soul Calibur storyline now. And for... I guess mainstream kind of explaining things out. That character is simply being referred to as the conduit.
Hmm.
And so when you go into other modes, you'll hear And you go into things like that timeline single player mode, and you'll see references to a character called the Conduit. They're talking about the character that you're playing as in Libra of Souls.
Yeah.
So that is a thing. But it's generally the same fare that you're used to from Edge Master, Weapon Master mode. You go around the map, just doing all sorts of interesting stipulation matches. Some of them are one round. Some of them are, best of five or best of three. It really just depends on the situation.
Yeah.
And, they didn't really try to reinvent the wheel, but they've certainly added a few layers of depth to it. It's not like you just get one version of a weapon and you have that weapon and so on and so forth. It takes more of an RPG approach where you can have different versions of weapons with different properties. And at one point in the game, you unlock a smithy who can augment weapons for you with older weapons that you might have in your inventory or materials that you've picked up along the way. So there's definitely some expansion to that. There are story arcs that will see you retracing your steps. There's some off the beaten path stuff that you can do, which is pretty cool. But by and large, it's the same kind of single player experience that, that you know from past Soul Calibur games. And they got rid of those damned, dungeons from Soul Calibur 2.
Oh, thank God.
So you don't have to worry about those either.
Hmm. Yeah, so it sounds like the story content at least is well done enough, apart from those rough edges with the AI just being stupid.
Yeah, there's some lazy AI involved, but the single player is very robust. Thankfully, it doesn't seem as though they've hidden any multiplayer content behind the single player, so you don't have to worry about leaving characters on the table or what have you. But on one of the side quests, I ran into Huang, which makes me think he's probably on deck for the DLC.
Yeah. DLC or possibly time release. Who knows? They haven't specifically said anything about that, but that wouldn't surprise me too much.
Yeah, they haven't said they're doing any time release stuff, but there are three DLC spots left to unlock. We now know what one of them is, but that's a story here in a few minutes. But that leaves two spots open, and I'm pretty sure those are both going to be Soul Calibur characters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of them probably Huang, and the other one I would guess to be Setsuka.
That'd be pretty solid for season one, and if it does well, then season two, who knows what they'll do.
Yeah, for sure. This is going to be a game that has some legs on it. The foundation that it's built upon is too strong for them to fuck it up this time around, so...
Yeah.
You say that, but...
Yeah, well, so far, players haven't found any, major, game-breaking issues like they did in 4 and 5, so... Yeah.
Okay.
But we'll see.
And as long as the community behaves itself and doesn't try to chop the pot at any majors, I don't think there's going to be any issue.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because they kind of got blacklisted during Soul Calibur 4 for that shit.
Yeah. So that was irritating. So that's pretty much it on your side?
It is, unless you guys have any more questions on Soul Calibur 6.
Yeah, no. The only thing is, I just want to play it. Next week, I'll probably be getting my hands on
excellent.
A copy. Getting in there.
Look forward to it. It's a good game.
Yeah. So how about you, Brandon?
So like I said, I'm the only one in this group right now who has Red Dead Redemption 2. Obviously, I can't, once we get Lee and Dan Rab here next week, we'll be going into more depth in it. But to try and keep it relatively brief, I still love it. It's still a great, amazing game. Just one pet peeve I have it's still kind of irritates me. Not be, you know, it's not a deal breaker or anything. It doesn't, like, overall hurt my opinion of the game.
Sounds pretty severe the way you're building it up, though.
No fast travel.
Ooh. That could be problematic considering how big that game is supposed to be.
Yeah, so at least, you know, not as far as I've gotten. I haven't found fast travel. It's possible that it's a thing that they'll put in at some point later on.
They intended to be like trains or taxi carriages, stuff like
that. Yeah, or stagecoach, stuff like that. But yeah, because one of the big, like, major features this time around is the horses that you use. It's not just, they're not just stand-ins for, you know, cars that you get in GTA. This is, they're living, breathing creatures that you're actually trying, that you have to, you know, you have to feed and up, you know, upkeep, make sure they're still healthy, you know, bond with them, all this stuff. So I kind of understand why they're doing it, because they're trying to make the horse a more major part, but you know, that's just a minor pet peeve, honestly, because right now where I'm at, it's not like a major distance between where I need to go and, like, you know, the camp where we're held up, but, you know, just you know, small little irritation, not much. But other than that, because I managed to find it cheap at a Walmart, I also got Assassin's Creed Origins, which, you know, it's, I'll be honest, I haven't played an Assassin's Creed game since, what was it, Black Flag?
Okay.
So, you know, like Assassin's Creed, you know, Syndicate and all that, I missed out on, but,
missed.
But part of what I actually do like this one, and for two reasons. First of all, is the fact that, you know, it takes place in Egypt, specifically Egypt around the time of Cleopatra. So, you know, it's a really interesting time in history where Egypt and you know, the Roman Empire, they're sort of melded together into a semi sort of beneficial relationship. The other reason I love it is because it actually, like, because it's essentially about the origins of the Assassin Order, it takes place outside of the whole Assassin Templar bullshit that a lot of the other games do.
Yeah.
So, you know, the, like, this time around, the character that you're playing as is, obviously, it's not a relative of Desmond Miles. It's another character. It's this woman named Layla that you're playing as outside of the Animus. Basically, she's the one of the major architects of the actual Animus technology, and she's holed up in this cave in the middle of Egypt somewhere. And the guy you're actually playing as, he's a, what they call a medje, which is a sort of like a, I guess, a sheriff or a police person or something for his village. And, you know, he goes from there and he goes to places like, you know, like Giza and Alexandria, you know, all the classic places of antiquity. It's a lot of fun. You know, just, it's the fact that because it's outside of that whole Assassin's Templar bullshit, it actually seems to be better.
Yeah.
They actually, like, give, it's more, story-wise, they take some more unique liberties with it. Plus, of course, the game also comes with that neat little grand tour.
Yeah,
that's really cool. Educational segment, where, you know, you basically get guided tours of, you know, ancient Egypt. It's neat.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that's,
is
what
that, I'm, a regular thing with Assassin's Creed games?
Nope, it was a completely new feature that they introduced with Assassin's Creed Origins.
Huh. That's a shame. That could enrich the entire series.
It could. The only problem is that the way that, like, for example, they did Assassin's Creed 3, which took place during the American War of Independence. Mm-hmm. And the problem with that is that the character they gave you, they got him too involved in the major events. Like, he's one of the guys dumping the tea at Boston Harbor. He's the guy who is helping Paul Revere, you know, go from place to place, step, you know, the British are coming. In fact, he's not even on his own horse. He's like on your horse riding on the back.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, that's what I've been playing. Chris, what about you?
I have been playing Return of the Oberdin, which is the new game from Lucas Pope, maker of Papers, Please. And it's very much a game that's kind of feels like it's come from a similar place as Papers, Please, where so this is kind of a detective kind of puzzle game.
Yeah.
A little bit. So the Oberdin is a ship, and I guess you are an inspector that's been hired by the insurance company that wants you to go figure out, you know, what happened, how everybody on this ship died. And your two tools is a book, to, you know, write down all of your findings in, and a, pocket watch.
Yeah.
The pocket watch lets you, when you find, a body, to see how, like, the moment they died. So, the first one you find, you use it, and you see, oh, this one guy shot this other guy with somebody else next to them. And you get a little bit of dialogue, but it's, for the most part, like a still scene. You just get to hear sort of the dialogue that leads up to that action. And then from there, you can sort of look at everybody there and zoom in on them, and that will tell you, okay, this person... in your book, you have a couple things in there. There's a map, shows you like the where this happened. As far as like along their whole voyage, it was supposed to go from I think the UK to South Africa, or at least south of Africa. It's just going around that coast, the western coast of Africa. And let's see, there's the crew and passenger list. There's the map of the ship itself, so you can see, like, oh, this room is for passengers, this is where the bosun is, and all these other people. And so, and also on there is a sketch of everybody that was on board. You don't have names for any of these people. You just have a separate list of, here's the passenger names, like the whole passenger list, and you have pictures. And so you look at these people, and... I should probably also share with you the Steam page so you can get a look at the style of this game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very much, so this whole thing takes place, I think, around 1800, mm-hmm. something like that. Let me see. Okay, let me share this because it has a really striking art style. That's not... I hate when Steam doesn't copy this shit. Copy.
Yeah.
Okay. No. Store page. That's the front page. Why is it going to the front page of Steam? That's why I can't get... Okay. There we go. Okay, this should work now. There you go. And it's influenced by, I guess, like the old like Macintosh-style games.
Mm-hmm.
There's a variety of versions of that, different options that are just kind of different color schemes. It mentions a couple different things, but I'm not well-versed in that stuff, so it might just be different ways that monitors worked back then.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
This art style is really striking.
Yeah, it's kind of like an art style that you would expect of that era.
Hmm.
They just built the whole game out of it, and so... you can see a screenshot of a guy taking a shot, shooting a gun, And that is sort of the first one. And you're like, okay, this guy, he is obviously killing somebody. And in this book, you see their picture, and it'll say, show that, like, the person that died, and it'll say, you know, this unknown soul was killed, you know, was killed by some unknown means. Mm-hmm. And you can click on it and say, okay, well, obviously the guy that's getting shot was shot with a gun. And you don't know his name yet, so you don't know. And you don't know who the attacker is, so you don't know that yet. You can't fill it in. And you're sort of working your way around. You know, there's like three people there in this whole scene. And so from there, you finish that. There's like a door that you go that goes back to the present. And then you go find the next one. And the cool thing is, like, a lot of stuff is locked here on the ship. But as you do this, like, the door that's behind this guy is now opened, because that was in the scene that you saw. And so now you go in there and you find another body. And so you do the same thing. See the scene which with he was dead, and you can figure out things. And I think the whole thing it tells you in the quick tutorials it has is, like, there's very few specific details that you are led to on this ship. There's, like, not much that tells you, like, definite details. You have to infer on a lot of stuff. And so, like, you go through this whole sequence here of this initial part, and you find out somebody saying a name for this person that's near them. And you're like, okay, I know that person's name. I can find them on the registry, and okay, I know that. And then they also say, you know, the rest of what they say, you know, very clearly says, oh, the person I killed is such and such, like, not really a name, but a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And you can infer from that also that those two are related in some way. And you start just inferring all this stuff and figuring it out. And it's a really cool way of doing all this stuff.
Yep.
And yeah.
This game is never going to sell because you actually have to use your brain.
I think it'll actually do pretty well. But in this book, there are 10 chapters. These are 10 separate events in which people have died. Hmm. And I've gotten through 3 of them so far. I've only figured out 3 people in the whole thing so far, even though I've probably seen at least like 20 or so people.
Hmm.
But also, once you figure out the people's names, how they died, maybe who their killer is or whatever, it locks in when you get 3 right. So I got the first 3 right, and so that locks them in, so you no longer have that field to fill in stuff.
Yeah.
And so that then filters through the rest. Like in the sketches, when you do like the zoomed in version of their faces, it'll be blurry for people you don't know. You haven't figured out who they are yet. And for those you have, it's clear. So it's a lot of really cool stylistic stuff. And there's some crazy shit I've seen so far. This ship, I assume, is cursed at some point because there's like a giant squid that attacks
yep.
at some point.
A Kraken, there's basically.
Yeah. There's some other weird shit that happens as well. That's, yeah, it's a really, really awesome game. And it's a really cool way of doing all of this stuff, especially as just, you know, hey, figure this out. Use the context of, you know, where these people are at, so you can figure out with, like, the ship, the map of the different parts of the ship. Like, I figured out, oh, this guy's the bosun, which, if you don't know, there's a glossary in the back, so you can figure out, like, what the fuck is a bosun? And, like, you talked about his mates, and also said, like, oh, this person, where's my Frenchman? And it's like, oh, let me go look at the registry. It's like, oh, there's somebody that's French on there. It's the only person that's French, so that's probably him.
Hmm.
And when he's his mate, it's like, oh, this is probably the bosun, because it's the bosun's mate, is the Frenchman. It's like, okay. Just start nailing these details down and sort of whittling things away. Though where I'm at currently is kind of like, there's just all these random people all over the place.
Hmm.
I do not know who they are at, but I'm slowly figuring things out. And what's cool is when you get these people nailed down, you can click on them, and it'll say, oh, you've seen this person in four memories. And you can look at their memories and be like, you first saw them here. This is where they died. You know, all that sort of stuff. That is a really cool way to do all this stuff. And it makes a lot of sense why this took, you know, a few years to get done.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a really awesome, like, detective game, essentially. In ways that, you know, most games don't do. Especially when you go think about, like, Batman. The Arkham games, where it's just kind of more streamlined.
Yeah.
Streamlined, simple. And, like, the Pocket Watch, you can even find dead bodies through the other memories, which makes them appear through the rest of the... in other parts of the ship. So you're like, oh, this person died at some point. But obviously you're not going to see their body because, you know, over the course of this, what's happened on this ship, it was, you know, thrown overboard or whatever, gotten rid of. So that is sort of how you start opening up these other timelines and such, which is really cool. But yeah, it's a really awesome game so far, and I'm looking forward to putting some more time into it. Kind of just trying to figure out why the hell all this weird shit happened. Because there are some other creatures that happened, and yeah, like the variety of ways that they die, because they give you a full list. Like, I assume there's at least one person has died through each of these ways. And there's, you know, shot. It's like shot by what? A cannon? A gun? You know, stabbed by, you know, knives, swords. There's all these variety of ways. There's lots of crazy shit. I think I saw one guy that's got shocked by lightning. It's like, oh, this is crazy shit. This is where some other crazy shit just started happening. It's really, really, really good. So I'm definitely looking forward to putting some more time into that. I've also been playing more Spider-Man, doing some more side quest stuff as I kind of try and get some of these side quest stuff done and collectibles and such. Like, I have a few more challenge things to do. I'm working on these series of side quests from this college student who, at this point, like, there are people getting corrupted by Mr. Negative. And so this happened at the college, so there's, like, different people from the college that have disappeared. And so you're kind of tasked with finding them by just using a picture that you're given. So you have to, like, look at it, and it's like, oh, you see the Statue of Liberty and some trees, so it's like, it's probably by this park down in the south part of the island, and that sort of stuff. And you have to take out some of these corrupted people, which is actually not too bad, because it's just two hits, and then he throws them on the ground, webs them, sticks them to the ground, because they're just corrupted, and you just kind of have to, like, knock them out for a bit.
Yep.
And yeah, that's so far has gone pretty well. And I finally got into the Fallout 76 beta, because they finally had some more sessions. And yeah,
that works.
Yeah. So that is a Fallout game. It kind of feels like an MMO, in a sense, because there are some points where I've gotten to some of these early quest areas where it's like, oh, go find this camp that the Overseer set up, where, for whatever reason, I guess the Overseer, she is kind of just gone out on her own and kind of set up stuff for the other vault dwellers to find. And so, like, I got to the first campsite, and, like, there's somebody else there doing stuff. And when they're, like, crafting at one of the different places, like, nobody else can use it. So it kind of feels like a bit like the Tomorrow Children, which was sort of a socialism simulator.
Yeah.
You had to wait in lines to be able to use crafting equipment and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More like a Soviet type of, or at least the stereotypical kind.
Yeah, so there's less of a line here. It's just like, well, I have to wait for them to finish. But that also encourages you. You have your own camp, and camp is an acronym set. I forget what that stands for, but it's for this like box that lets you set up your own shelter and all that, which you can move around. You initially set up in just one spot, but you have to pay like 5 caps to move it around, which is not much, at least as far as where I'm at. But yeah, you're doing a lot of the same stuff that you did in Fallout 4, except now there's a chance of other people being around. And yeah, that kind of gives it a vibe of being an MMO. I haven't seen any dicks that are just trying to troll people and all that. I think partly because with this beta, the progress will carry over
yeah.
the main game, which I guess is also why it's very, very limited in terms of how many hours and how many sessions they've had, since we've only had 3 out of 6 days they've had any sessions.
Don't want a bunch of people to be starting off way higher level than everybody else.
Yeah, I think I would have been okay with not having that carryover and having it be more readily available.
Yeah.
Especially because, you know, a 2-hour session's nothing in Fallout.
Yeah, you don't get
like I'm still just trying to figure out what's going on. So they're like events that happen, sort of like a Destiny or whatever, where it's like take down these. Like it's the bigger robots, the Protectrons, except they're supervisors of the farmhands, which are the iRobots. And so you're supposed to take down like 3 of them. There's like one in like each of these different areas around this this church. And I did that, and it's like, okay, and there's like 20 minutes to go. Kind of waiting for other people to do it, I guess. And yeah, I was... And there's no NPCs around, but the way they get around that is they all leave like audio diaries for you. So you pick those up off of random dead bodies, and you get somebody telling you stuff. Like, that's how they're adding their lore. Because I think the only, like, merchants you get are robots that have been set up to sell stuff to you. Which you can get cosmetic stuff, as well as just supplies and all that other stuff. It's not too hard to get that stuff. But, yeah, it's all right. But it kind of just makes me want to go play Fallout 4.
Yeah, or you don't have to wait in line.
Yeah, that and, you know, not having to, you know, deal with other people. Because I'm not sure how the instancing works as far as, like, loot and all that. Because, like, in the church is, like, another little, like, safe base you can hang out in. And, like, there's places to sleep because you... It's an actually, like, a cheap way of getting health back.
Yeah.
But you also have to worry about, like, your thirst and hunger, which is not a thing in the regular games. And so there's points where I just had to eat stuff just to fill up those meters, even though I didn't really need it. And I had some issues just trying to get rid of my rad buildup. I used the rat away, and it took down some of it, but like a lot of items you eat will give you rad as well.
Yeah,
so it's
irradiated.
Yeah, but even stuff I've cooked, and it's like a little bit less. The one thing I actually found pretty neat is like there's no encumbrance, at least in terms of movement. Like if you get over encumbered, you're not slowed.
Right.
Action points are go down faster, I think.
Yeah.
So if you try to run, you run less, that sort of stuff. But if you don't run around, it's not really an issue. It just comes up in weird ways where you're trying to like jump around, and I guess that uses action points. So you like do one jump, and it's like, oh, I'm down to like 30% action points. Weird stuff like that. I assume this game will be pretty good because they're kind of just using a lot of the same stuff that Fallout 4 did, and people probably want to do that stuff again.
Yeah,
especially with being able to team up with friends or whatever. But solo wise, I don't know if it's going to be doing anything for me. I haven't put enough time into 4 or even 3 or New Vegas, so I have all 3 of those games I can play instead of buying this new thing.
Yeah.
But it was interesting to check it out, and I'll probably check it out some more and probably do a video when one of these other sessions pops up. I think they finally did announce some further dates. We got the 30th. That's going to be 7 to 11 p.m. at night. That's when PS4 and PC gets going. So yeah, 3 sessions only for the Xbox One people for the exclusive week. And that's 8 hours total. Yeah, so we get a 4-hour session on the 30th. We get one on the 1st, 2 to 7. So that's a 5-hour session. Their first time going over 4. November 3rd, there's 5 to 9 p.m. And then November 4th is 2 to 9 p.m. So 7-hour session. I think that's it. So 4 sessions with the other platforms on.
Yeah. I mean, the game comes out a couple of weeks after that, so.
Yep.
Yeah. But, yeah, like, they should have announced all of this before any of these happened, so people understood what was going on. Because otherwise, it would have been reasonable to think, oh, there's going to be daily sessions, some might be longer than others, and all that. But, no, it's like, out of 2 weeks, you get, like, 7 events. And, like, a 3-day gap before RDR2 came out.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you guys should have taken advantage of that. Instead of letting people play, you know, Red Dead Redemption, like, hey, come back, please. We got the game.
Mm-hmm.
We got this other survival game. You got to worry about your hunger and your thirst and crafting stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, it seems all right.
Yeah, it's Fallout.
Yeah.
Kind of is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can, like, just pick up everything, but it seems like there's a little bit less of it, especially when you're in the vault. Like, you can't pick up any of that.
Mm.
It's like, what's the point of a vault if you can't pick up the shit in it?
Yeah.
Even, because it's like the whole thing is, like, you're going out and exploring the wilderness after things have supposedly gotten at least somewhat more safe.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't you taking supplies with you?
Yeah. Go by the seat of your pants.
Yeah. Sort of on the way out, there are like robots that are like, hey, take your camp thing with you. Here's some stim packs and such.
Mm.
But I was like, just let me loot everything else because there's trays on these tables and diner. Like, I got to take those. I want to strap food trays onto myself. The true Fallout crafting experience. But yeah, that's been pretty much it. I fired around in Forza Horizon 4 again. I really hate that the map, when you turn off all the icons, if you do something that's like, oh, you hit another speed zone, we're going to add some more to your map. When you go back to the map, it just turns it all back on again. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
and you can't skip those narrations when they do that. That's always been an annoyance in the series. It's like, shut up. I know what you're doing. Shut up and just do it and go. Shut up. And it keeps going. It's like, I just got to quit this game.
It sounds like it's a source of aggravation for you at this point.
It's like they should do some things to make it more accessible and just let you skip the thing it does 100 times.
Yeah.
Which is have somebody tell you, like, hey, we're going to add more icons. Like, no shit, you've done this 20 times already.
Yeah.
You don't need to sit here and try to make, like, a story out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so I think we can move on to the show.
All right. So we'll start off with Soul Calibur 6. The next DLC character has been announced. Crossover. Nier Automata's 2B is showing up for some reason.
Yeah, considering the fact that a lot of the custom-made characters from the character creation, some of them looked a little too good for 2B, this kind of makes sense now. Because turns out she was already in the game.
Yeah. The pieces were already in there.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
Yeah, so they just put her in, and Namco, just stop. Seriously. Yeah.
Seems like a pretty good fit.
Not really.
I'm just in favor of calling an absolute 10-year moratorium on all crossovers or guest appearances.
Yeah.
So that they can be special occasions again. They've been they've become ubiquitous and just hoard out enough that they've lost all meaning at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one seems to come at the tale of Tekken getting Noctis from Final Fantasy 15.
Yeah.
Which is sort of a similar character of, you know, this person that like throws swords at you.
Yeah. And another Unlimited Blade Works kind of critical edge as well.
Yeah.
To go alongside Oswell's.
I mean, it was cool when, you know, you could play Ruby in, like, you know, Blaze Blue, but at this point, it's just getting ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like the other two characters had better not be guests.
Yeah, especially with how many important Soul Calibur characters are still missing from this game.
Yeah. So, Namco, really, seriously, just stop with the guest characters. I'm okay with them having one guest character per game, but constantly adding them is getting a little bit irritating.
I'll say this much. If they're going to do a guest character, I would prefer it be like what they did back during, what was that? I think it was Soul Calibur 4. When they got like a bunch of famous manga artists to like create original characters for it.
Yeah, that was in 4, and that ended up turning out to be not so great.
The designs were great.
Yeah, designs were great, but they weren't balanced for shit, unfortunately. they need to do... there's so much potential there for creativity in that universe.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need to just rely on crossovers from other properties. Yeah. Just, you know, let Project Soul do their thing. So, yeah.
It really does show a lack of faith in the team, too.
Yeah.
That's really what rubs me the wrong way, and has rubbed me the wrong way going all the way back to Soul Calibur 2.
Hmm. Yeah.
Also, how is it...
You do not need guest characters to sell your game. It's fucking Soul Calibur. If you developed it right, it will sell by its own merits.
Yeah.
Also, how is it that Geralt, like, has a whole storyline in this game, and he doesn't try to have sex with at least one of the female characters?
Yeah, party foul.
Yeah, seriously.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you know what game he is from?
Yeah, his depiction is as incomplete as his moveset.
Yeah. It's, more time.
I mean, ask Ivy. I'm present. Pretty sure she'd be up to it.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, she'd be probably first in line, to be honest. But anyway, she is kind of a crazy person. And speaking of crazy people...
Well, it wouldn't be the first time that Geralt's put his pen in crazy.
True. Speaking of crazy people, Dead or Alive 6... Kira? Well, yeah. Stop stepping all over my segues! Anyway. So, Dead or Alive 6, another character reveal. It's Christy.
Yep.
Our favorite white-haired psychopath is now confirmed to be part of the roster.
And she's apparently gotten a pair of hips now, too.
Yeah.
I'm just a fan of this redesign all around.
Yeah.
Yeah, logical proportions. It's a good thing.
There's still going to be jiggle physics, don't worry. I mean, that's going to be in the game. It's just now they're going to make it less...
stupid?
Extra. Yeah. Anti-gravity, I guess, is the term I'm looking for.
It's not going to be extra anymore.
Yeah. So, I
mean,
like,
and for the record,
they're
still going to have the classic costumes, so there's still going to be plenty of skin for you.
Yeah, if you want to go that way, but, you know, if you don't want to and actually want to play the game, you can do that too.
Yeah.
I'm liking everything I'm seeing about Dead or Alive 6 so far. It's
and you haven't even played it yet.
No, I haven't played it.
I've played it. I'm chomping at the bit here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's just the irritating part is all those douchebags who are like, SJWs have ruined it. All that shit. It's true, those people.
You know what I call those people? Idiots.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and they don't really, take too much stock on what they say at this point. So, good stuff coming to Dead or Alive 6. That's coming out in February during crunch time, which is, well, actually about a week before everything else comes out, so that's one good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Next up we got Medieval. We kind of saw this announcement last year.
Yeah, this is a remake of kind of a cult hit.
Yeah.
From the original PlayStation era.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is going to be it's a full-on remake. It's not a remaster. And it's we're expecting to get a trailer on Halloween, fittingly enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sean Lee was on the Blockcast. And that was talked about them using a lot of like inspiration from the original game, key art and all that.
Mm-hmm.
For this, and it's being developed by Other Ocean.
Yeah, well, they've done some okay stuff. So.
They'll get it right eventually.
Eventually. Well, I'm sure they've got enough supervision to make sure they don't fuck it up. So, we'll see on Wednesday when that trailer comes out what we got. Hopefully they show some gameplay and not just some cinematic stuff. So, that'll be nice to know.
Yep.
Yeah. So, in other Sony news, the preview for the update that's going to let you change your PSN ID is out. Apparently changing your PSN ID comes with a whole crap ton of warnings.
Yep.
Some games that you got might not work. Your old purchased content, apparently some of it may not transfer over. All kinds of warnings of stuff that may not work.
I think for the DLC thing, because there were some games on the PS3 that only sold the DLC in-game.
Yeah.
I think those are probably what they're referring to. Mm. Like some of those like Metal Gear Online stuff for the MGS4, and it's like, that's been shut down, so it's not.
Yeah, so that doesn't matter.
It's like some studios and such kind of weirdly kept things off of PSN.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably going to be affected more than anything else.
Yeah, but I wonder how many of those even, like, are still running.
Yeah.
That would be the question. Yeah, so there's a whole lot of warnings here, and I think they stopped just short of this changing your PSN ID may kill your dog.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's,
I'm don't sure they'll have to patch it in at some point.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It seems like they're saying a lot of stuff to cover their asses. But it'll probably go more smoothly than they think.
You just got to rip the Band-Aid off.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, it's never going to heal.
Yep. Speaking of stuff going badly, Sony shared a reel of bugs from God of War that their QA team found, and they're
oh boy,
pretty damn some really hilarious. Good stuff.
Now, is this stuff that made it into the final game, or is this stuff
they caught?
It's just stuff they recorded as they were like, "Oh, that's something that shouldn't happen." Like a lot of like facial animation bugs with
the nightmare fuel
Atreus, where he's like looks like he's just making faces all the time. They got some screenshots of some of that stuff, and there's a lot of good stuff in there. Yeah.
Speaking of which, there was one year when MLB The Show had some of the best nightmare fuel in its pre-testing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm glad that they, like, caught this and, like, shared it, because this stuff is, it's great to see.
It's too good to just let it die on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, it's like, bonus features on Blu-rays and stuff. You kind of want to have this stuff.
Yeah, that's sort of the beauty of having a system where there's native video capture.
Yeah, it's just running in the background and always capturing stuff. So.
Yeah, and I guess also part of this, they dropped the price of God of War to $40.
Hmm. That's good game.
Yep, it's got a new base price now for the for people that want to jump in, I guess. Like, oh, hey, here's all the bugs you didn't get. All right, I'll buy it.
Yep. So, yeah. All right, so other news. Spyro Reignited is coming out on the 13th, but they're also now doing a bundle with the Crash Insane Trilogy. So,
yep.
If you didn't get that ahead of time and you were planning on getting Spyro Reignited, well, maybe you might want to pick this bundle up instead.
Eh, no, I'm just ready for Reignited.
Yeah, so six games. A little bit more expensive, but meh.
That's I think it's about $20 cheaper.
Yeah, than buying both at once. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's still more expensive than just getting Spyro Reignited on its own. So.
Yeah. Yeah, if you already have Crash, you don't need it.
Yeah. So. Yeah, which I do. So probably just end up buying Spyro. Just something I thought I'd bring up for those people who hadn't gotten a chance to check him out yet.
Yep.
In other news, Best Buy and Limited Run Games are doing a partnership, and Limited Run's, Limited Run physical releases of digital titles, some of them are going to be showing up at Best Buy stores, so you actually may stand a chance of actually getting one.
Good. Oh, wow.
Instead of, being immediately sold out 10 minutes after they're announced.
Yep,
pretty
much.
Which is what happens with these games. Yeah, so Yooka-Laylee, you can buy that physically on the Switch. I don't know why you'd want to, but you could. Among some other ones that that they're going to be doing. Hopefully this is something that they continue to do, and you have a chance of getting some of these fun digital releases physically. And they do good stuff over there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not a whole lot to say there. Just get it. Good stuff. Oh boy. This is a shit show that happened. So, At Games released a, basically a Namco Bandai Pac-Man / bunch of games on it. You know, the classic stuff.
The right? kind of thing they do.
Yeah, one of those plug-in play consoles.
Yeah.
It's basically that. There's like six or seven games on there, all the ones you remember, Pac-Man, Galaga, etc., etc.
But they somehow found a way to At Games it up?
Yep. Mm-hmm. They totally did, because there are two different versions. There's one version that has the arcade versions of the games, and there's one version that has the NES versions of the games that run like shit.
Oh, Lord.
And the packaging is exactly the same on both.
They had
absolutely
one job.
No way of telling.
Yeah, and the arcade version is what they sent out to reviewers.
And the one you can buy is the
NES version.
Yeah.
So that's big Switch right there.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
To which, people obviously shit on them on their Twitter account.
That's the kind of thing Class Action's made of.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And as they said, the earlier review version could not make it to production, even though it was anticipated it would. They did not elaborate on why the version with the arcade games did not get produced. And I guess Kotaku here did not get a response asking for clarification. But they decided not to stop tweeting. They responded more to fans. And fans just... You're doing the thing like, oh, you playing this to screw us out of money and all this shit. It's like, no, if they had their ducks in a row, they would have just done the arcade versions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they had their ducks in a row, they wouldn't be at games.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, this company is starting to look more and more shady by the day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's going to solve the whole problem with Sega.
Yeah, well, Sega's already cut ties with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I thought they still had some contracts with them, but
I think they just basically killed it.
Fulfillable if they're out of business.
Yeah, it's like that Genesis flashback that mini one that they're going to be doing. They got another company working on the software for that, so yeah.
Yeah, it seems like potentially later production runs will have the arcade versions back in it.
Yeah, but it's like already done though.
What are you going to do for the people that got the wrong ones?
Yeah. You're going to do a refund policy? You're going to let them send it in and get it replaced?
They're either going to do that or it will be administered rectally by a court of law.
Yeah. I mean, this is, yeah, it's not good. You had one job.
Yeah.
Seriously. How do you fuck up Pac-Man? I mean, yeah, you fuck it up by putting the NES version on there, which is god-awful.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, now it's like, don't buy these fucking things.
Yeah, just stop buying anything with an At Games label on it. That'll solve the problem.
Pretty much any of these, oh, it's all in the controller thing.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah.
Congrats, don't let your nostalgia make purchasing decisions for you.
Yeah.
Without knowing exactly what they are.
Yeah. I mean, for a lot of people, though, that is the purchasing decision.
Oh, it has the Pac-Man on it. That must be good.
Yeah. And that's what At Games, I think, preys on. I think, you know, they're not good. Nope. I've never been a fan of their stuff. It's always been I've always found it kind of low quality and meh. But anyway.
Shoddy garbage, all of it.
Yeah. So in other news, the Intellivision Amico has been announced. It's being led by, you know, Tommy Tallarico is at the head of this project.
And there's like a lot of noteworthy people attached to this thing.
Yeah, a lot.
Like Micah's in there, and there's a bunch of others. It's like weirdly, weirdly like full of people that you expect to get this right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So some of the details have been revealed.
Yeah. So
go ahead.
Yeah. So it's called the Amico. I don't know why. See, it's going to be out October 10th, 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So 2 years from now. Their price point is going to be between $150 and
$180. Mm-hmm.
Every single game published for the platform will be exclusive and cost between $3 and $8. But it'll have a bunch built in over 20 more in its online store. Let's see, most every game made for the home console these days is created with only the hardcore gamer in mind. We see a world where everyone is interested in playing at home and with friends. This isn't currently possible because the barrier to entry is nearly impossible for a non-gamer due to the complexity of the controls, which that doesn't make sense when they have replicas of the original controllers, which none of those ever made sense to me. let's see, intricacy of gameplay, expense of the hardware and software, steep learning curve with an unbalanced fun factor for the beginner. Goal is to create a console that both gamers and non-gamers will be able to have fun with and play together. And yeah, so like I think there were some like goals. So like games that take more than like 10 seconds to figure out are not allowed on it.
Hmm.
Let's see. Yeah, there's like no microtransactions, no DLC. What you release with the game is all that should be there.
Yeah.
The concept art for the console itself is like this white like dock station for the controllers.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Bluetooth controllers. It has like the keypad design on it, circular direction pad, and buttons on the sides. It has a gyroscope, an accelerometer for motion controls, and up to 6 players will be able to connect to the device using a free smartphone app for iOS and Android.
Yeah.
Which is weird. So yeah, the launch lineup. Let's see. They got television titles, Astro Smash, Shark Shark, Baseball, Night Stalker, Skiing, Math Fun, Snafu, Utopia, Frog Bog, Boxing, Bowling, Triple Action, Tron Deadly Discs, Cloudy Mountain, Crown of Kings, Star Strike, Horse Racing, Auto Racing, and B-17 Bomber.
B-17 Bomber, yeah.
Yep. Let's see, there's Atari.
I'm actually kind of surprised they got Disc to Tron in there because of the Disney license.
Yeah. Yeah. But I imagine it's probably not. It's probably easy to convince them, like, hey, we're just going to release this thing.
Yeah.
And it's not exactly a license they're hugely interested in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, so like there's Atari games, Pong, Asteroids, Centipede, Tempest, Adventure, Missile Command, Yar's Revenge, Breakout, Lunar Lander, Night Driver, Skydiver, and Warlords.
Hmm.
See, iMagic, Microsurgeon, Atlantis, Demon Attack, and Dracula.
Hmm.
And then they got some additionals. Miner 2049er, Super Burger Time, Bad Dudes, Caveman Ninja, Moon Patrol, R-Type, 10-Yard Fight, Load Runner, Spelunker, Kung Fu Master, Moto Race USA, Tropical Angel, Arctron, and ToeJam & Earl.
I know most of those.
Wow.
Yeah. See, each of the titles above will supposedly feature exclusive content available only on Amico. All be available to download from an online store. Every title is family-friendly. No teen, mature, or adults-only rated titles. Yeah, no in-app purchases or download content.
How did they get 10-Yard Fight? Doesn't Nintendo own that?
I don't think so.
Huh.
10-Yard Fight was, I think an IREM arcade game before.
IREM, Taito.
Yeah.
Wow.
Published in the U.S. by Taito, but IREM in Japan.
Because it had the full, like, first-party Nintendo branding on it.
Yeah, it was published in North America by Nintendo. But,
and that's how they also got Moon Patrol, Kung Fu Master, R-Type.
Yeah, I think these are arcade versions, though, so that's cool.
Yeah, I'm not sure who owns IREM at this point.
And it looks like this is, like, this is Intellivision. This isn't just a bunch of guys who came across and bought the name.
Yeah.
This looks to me far more interesting than that VCS.
Mm-hmm.
And the timing of it, the release 2020 is going to be putting it right up against probably what will be PS5 and Xbox, whatever the hell.
It is a ninth console. Gen platform.
It is a ninth gen platform, except it's, I think
it doesn't have a ninth gen philosophy, but it's a ninth gen platform.
Yeah, it's a ninth gen platform with I think third or fourth gen philosophy, and I'm okay with this.
Yeah,
I'm in. $50 to $180, games that cost $4 to $8. I think they actually may have something here.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm trying to see what other details they have on their site.
One thing I'm going to say. You might have had Sony and Microsoft kind of flirting with going back up to the $500 price point with the PS5, whatever you want to call the next Xbox. Not now.
Actually, they still might. Even if the Amico comes out at $179, $180, I don't think it's particularly going to be competing with the likes of PS4 and PS5 or Xbox 2. I'm very curious about this, especially with the content restrictions that they're putting in there.
That's true.
No team related games. There's something very, very, there's something here. Mm-hmm. I'll just put it that way. I'm going to have to look into this more because there's the kernel of greatness in here. You know, this might actually become what I've actually wanted for a long time, and that is a legal and inexpensive virtual console.
Yes.
And if you look at the titles that they're going for at this point.
That's right, in the strike zone.
It's looking like it might actually be aiming for that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
it's
Tommy Tallarico, so
he knows his shit.
I'm looking at the press release they put out alongside this. For the controllers, there's four arcade-style tactile feedback buttons, force feedback. You can use the controller horizontally or vertically.
Mm-hmm.
And even goes back and forth depending on whether you're left or right-handed.
Yep.
So it's kind of reversible in that way. It has wireless onboard charging. So you plug it into the console itself, and that'll charge it up.
Yep.
Speaker, microphone, and the app allows you to use phones as controllers.
Yeah.
So you don't need to buy multiples of those if you don't want to.
Yeah.
I don't have a trophy achievement system.
Yeah. Nintendo.
Yeah.
It has a, what they call a time and space leaderboard system, which includes high scores by locations and calendar.
Yeah.
Multiplayer online gaming and structured multi-tiered tournament play.
Yep.
And, yeah, the Intellivision online store.
Yep. Yeah, let's hope they put out some more details of this.
Yeah, so I guess all those titles I listed are, they label them as here, reimagined and remade exclusively for the Intellivision Amico.
Yeah.
So it may not be the original games as they were.
Which is fine.
Yeah. A lot of them maybe shouldn't be.
Yeah.
I mean, remake Astro Smash? Yeah, I'm okay with that. Because the original was fun, but incredibly infuriating.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I also have a long list of history and facts pointing out them being the first and all these things.
Yeah.
Like Intellivision's first video game console had a built-in pause feature on the controller.
Yeah.
The Intellivision game Utopia was the very first real-time strategy and city-building god game.
Hmm. Yeah.
Intellivision was responsible for the first console war.
True.
And it launched a national ad campaign against then rival Atari.
Yeah.
Using George Plimpton as spokesman.
Hey, I lived through that.
He survived the first console war.
Yep. I'm a veteran. So, yeah, let's hope we see more of this. This is very, 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 very exciting. For me, at least. So let's move on to our last couple of stories. Next up, we got Battlefield 5's Battle Royale mode not coming until 2019.
Nope.
This might be a deal breaker for some people.
Yeah.
Especially
considering that.
Big feature.
Yeah, especially considering that Call of Duty's Battle Royale is killing it this year.
Yeah, though, I think there's a certain contingent of Battlefield players that just want, you know, Battlefield multiplayer.
Yeah.
And they're not sacrificing, like, a campaign to get this thing in.
Yeah.
And so I imagine, sort of the same way, they're just going to get it out there when it's ready instead of trying to rush it out for launch.
Yeah.
Because that would probably be better. That would probably be worse than anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, they've pointed out it's going to be out probably the January to March time frame.
Okay, so it's not that big of a delay.
No. Be out, like, they shut off their, like, first few, like, big updates they're planning. And yeah, so, like, add a war story in December, January time frame, practice range, vehicle cosmetics, and tank battles map. Belgium. And, yes. And you're going to have the Combat Strike. I guess that's the Battle Royale thing.
Mm-hmm.
Grand Operations, Return of Rush, and Squad Conquest in that January-March time frame. Oh, Battle Royale is going to be by March.
Hmm.
It's called Firestorm.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm going to have some more stuff there. So, they got content coming.
Yeah.
Kind of doing the thing that, like, Assassin's Creed Odyssey should have done is like, hey, just take out some of this stuff that might not be ready yet and just spread it out so people can keep coming back and have new stuff.
Yeah.
Instead of just overwhelming the game.
Yeah. As long as what they ship is, you know, complete and fun, you know, the other stuff that they add is, you know, bonus. It would have been nice if they had maybe, like, not tried to tout the Battle Royale mode initially, because that might leave a sour taste in some people's mouth.
Yeah.
Live and learn. So that's Battlefield. And finally, Microsoft is probably going to be bringing the Xbox Game Pass to the PC, which is weird, because there wouldn't be that many games to put on it.
Yeah, having to deal with the Windows Store is not going to be great either.
No.
Yeah, a lot of people are, like, thinking it means, like, they're going to announce, like, Xbox 360 BC on PC.
So that would be killer.
Yeah, it's like, if that happens, cool, but I'm not going to bank it.
Nope.
I assume it's going to be like they're going to negotiate with PC devs, like, hey, bring your thing to Windows Store and Game Pass. Give people a reason to try it out beyond just the Microsoft stuff.
Yeah. I can guarantee that none of Valve's games are going to be on the Windows Store, ever.
No.
Gabe doesn't like Microsoft so much. But anyways. Yeah. Well, at least it will bring, like, the PC stuff that they do, like Gears of War, Forza's, probably Crackdown 2, Sea of Thieves. That's all stuff that's going to be pretty sure to be there.
Yeah.
And there are third-party games already on the Windows Store, so the lineup might be different, but it might be worth it.
Yeah.
Especially if you buy one subscription and you get both, then you're pretty good.
Yeah. It gives them competition to EA's Origin Access Premier.
Yeah.
Which is kind of Game Pass, but for PC.
Yeah, and that one is particularly interesting because it doesn't just give you the like base version of the game. You actually get the version with all of the DLC.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's actually kind of some pretty stiff competition. So.
Yeah. So it gives you kind of more substantial lineup so you could subscribe to Game Pass as a PC person instead of just having to be Xbox first. Because you're not getting much the other way around.
Yep. So, yeah, we'll see what they end up doing with this one. So, details to follow, I'm sure, at X018 sometime soon.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I guess in the next couple weeks.
Yep. So finally, let's get on to our picks of the week and wrap up the show. And my pick is Massive Attack's Mezzanine album. You know that I'm sure you guys have all listened to this album at one point.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's like probably the best work that they've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
This year is the 20th anniversary of the album. So Massive Attack is re-releasing it on a brand new format, DNA.
Mm.
So yeah, if you want to get your copy of Massive Attack's, Mezzanine album in a spray bottle. Yeah, not kidding. It does actually come in a spray bottle.
Yeah.
You have to spray it on the wall and then scrape it off and then put it in the player to be able to read it. And the players don't actually exist yet because commercially viable DNA sequencing equipment is, well, not here yet.
Yeah.
So this may be one of these things that you get and maybe in 20 years you'll be able to play it. So,
mm-hmm.
Hey, but it's cool to see like something from, you know, a band that is definitely, always has been progressive and on the cutting edge of technology, doing stuff like this. So,
yep.
That's my completely impractical pick for this week.
Wow.
Pat?
Yeah, I've actually got a pick this week. NHL.com has a really good retrospective of NHL 94 for its 25th anniversary. They definitely covered all the ground there was to cover from, going back and talking to Mark Lesser, who programmed the game, and they talked to Jeremy Roenick, of course, who was basically the best player in that game. Rammer weighed in on how sales figures are not really available that far back, so they don't really have any idea even internally how well it did. They talked to NHL players about their experiences growing up playing the game. It's really a good read, and it's worth setting aside some time to go over. So,
Can we both agree at this point that the SNES version of NHL 94 was an abomination?
I never really played it.
Yeah, it's like, imagine the Genesis version with slightly better audio and control delay. So, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
You can't play NHL with lag.
Yeah.
Nope.
That's what you get in the SNES version. So.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Just point out, I'm just quickly looking at eBay here for copies of NHL 94, and it's cheap. So, yeah pick up a copy for the Genesis, not the SNES. I'm kind of surprised that that actually never made it to, like, some virtual console or anything like that. Although
licensing!
Yeah. Big issues there. So, Chris, you got something for us?
Yeah, so there's a pretty big sale going on the Switch eShop right now. Mm-hmm. With quite a bit of indie stuff that's on sale. Let's see, there's Crypt of the NecroDancer for $8. Some of the THQ Nordic stuff's a little bit high, just because it's some of the first few times it's been on sale, compared to the others where, like, Battle Chasers is $28, instead of being, like, $10 on the other consoles.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, some of the indie stuff has some good prices, like Floor Kids for $14, Fury is $12, let's see, Golf Story is $10. That's a good one for people to get. See, Hello Neighbor is $24. Human Resource Machine is $8. I think all of the Tomorrow Corp games are $8, which are all good games.
Yeah.
Inside and Limbo are on sale. Inside's $14. Limbo is $7.
Hmm.
Let's see, Jotun Valhalla Edition is $9. Let's see, Monster Hunter Generations Ultimate is $45. Mr. Shifty for $9. The Mummy Demastered is $14. See, the Outlast games are on sale. $12.49 for the bundle for the original game. Outlast 2 is $15. Oxenfree is $5. That's a good one to get. Pixel Junk Monsters 2 is $10.49. That's a good one to get. Pwned is $17.49. Let's see, Severed is $7.49. That's a really good one. The two Shantae games they have on there. Pirate's Curse is $16. Half Genie Heroes, $14. Let's see. Yeah, Titan Quest is $32, which is, yeah, a little bit high. I think it's $9 on Xbox One.
Hmm.
And was that on PS4 pretty recently? Yeah, Sever's also on sale on the 3DS and Wii U. I think Wii U also has the Tomorrow Corp games that are on sale as well, along with a couple others. But, yeah, they got some stuff I think are also going on. Let's see. Yeah, okay. Yoku's Island Express is $12. That's a good one. The Scribblenauts games they have on there. There's the Mega Pack, which includes, I think, the DC game and I think Unlimited for $20, which that's a pretty good deal for that. Kingdom New Lands is $7.49. Keep Talking Nobody Explodes is $11.24, and Just Shapes and Beats for $18. So there's some nice stuff there.
Hmm.
And some particular scary games for Halloween.
Yeah, everybody's doing Halloween sales right now.
Yeah. And also I want to highlight that Giant Bomb is 10 this year. They turned 10.
Mm.
And so at that point, they also put out a special episode of the Bombcast. It's called We Are Sorry, 10 Years of the Giant Bombcast. With, like, fan favorite moments clips in there, as well as, like, just some anecdotes and such from the crew. Has been on there over the years.
Yeah,
it's a good, like, nostalgia fest to go through and listen to a lot of the classic scenes. Like the guys reading the quotes that, like, on the New Yorker they were in, like, took quotes out of the Bombcast of Ryan going of the assassin stabbing somebody, Assassin's Creed. And the absurdity of getting quoted for that, stuff like that. Yeah.
In the New Yorker.
Yeah.
Of all places.
And there's lots of great stuff there. It's like 4 hours long.
Wow.
Yeah, that's definitely a one you want to put on, just listen to it for an afternoon.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think at some point Jeff's going to be a giant bomb longer than he was at GameSpot pretty soon.
Mm. Yeah.
He's getting pretty close. I was at GameSpot for like 12 years before he got fired.
Yeah. And now the same company that owned GameSpot owns Giant Bomb. So there's that.
Awkward.
Yeah, but they're also letting them sort of do things how they want.
Yeah.
They're not doing the same mistake of putting somebody in charge of the site who has no idea how games media runs.
Yeah, clearly. Otherwise, probably the Bombcast would have been canceled long ago.
And they're doing a big overhaul of the site coming up soon. If you just go to beta.giantbomb.com, it's more video focused.
Yeah.
And they put out a video sort of talking about that stuff, talking about being influenced by Netflix, sort of how to present all this stuff. So like the different series, you can actually watch like one episode and it'll just go right into the next ones and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's good.
Make it a lot easier.
Well, they do a lot of really good video stuff there. So.
Yeah. And it makes it a lot easier than just having to go through some of the clumsy ways they have it now.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's looking to be a pretty good overhaul of the site. Mm. And kind of just getting away from, because like if you look at the current version, there's like a big news tab, and even though they don't really do news anymore,
mm-hmm.
It's like finally having to give up the notion that they'll ever do that.
Because
pretty much what they do now is just announcements. It's like they can just do that other ways.
Yeah. Are they keeping like the wiki element of the site?
Yeah. Yeah, that's getting overhauled as well.
Hmm.
Yep, to make some of that stuff easier to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're just making it easier for have the video stuff be consumed.
Hmm. Cool.
And if you want to just yell at the staff, you can in the beta version because that stuff's all going to get wiped. So don't be too bad or else they'll just ban you completely from the site.
Yeah.
But if you want to just say dumb stuff, you can.
Yeah. Yeah. And it would be completely appropriate because they say dumb stuff all the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And that's why we love them.
Yeah, I think Jeff was playing with the leap, the magic leap,
mm-hmm.
on the most recent Unprofessional Fridays.
Yeah.
So this is pretty weird. Also, the goggles itself gets hot as you use it more.
Yeah. Hot face.
Yeah. And so not for the same reasons that you would get it in VR.
Nope. Yeah. Let's just call that product a first gen. basically not even a first gen because consumers aren't going to get their hands on this.
Yeah, it's $2,400.
Yeah.
It's like, who are the consumers that devs are making games for right now?
Mm-hmm.
Well, right now devs are making games for each other at this point.
Yep.
But yeah. So let's call it a week. I'd like to remind everybody.
Speaking of anniversaries, if you count all of the kind of experimental sort of preliminary testing out of things that preceded the number of episodes, next week is our fourth anniversary.
Technically, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah. That's four. We've been doing this 4 years. Crap. Where has my life gone?
Yeah.
No, but I've had a lot of fun doing this podcast. It's actually been quite good for me, to be honest. So,
yeah.
So with that, I'd like to remind everybody that if you're not subscribed to the show, you can do so. You can do so on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast aggregator. We on Spotify? I don't know. Well, if we're on Spotify, we'll probably be by next week. Mm-hmm. So I'll make sure of that. Not that anybody actually downloads podcasts on Spotify, but okay. You can also check us out at smashpad.com. We got some written stuff going up. Brandon's Valkyrie Chronicles review is done, and that's going to be posted in the next day or two. Yeah. We got a bunch of other reviews coming up as well. So stay tuned for that. For Patrick Mifflin, Brandon Perkins, and Chris Sologi, I'd like to say see you next week.